This is The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. During these short and dark winter days when first light is about 7:30 a.m. and the sun dips behind the mountains by 4:30 p.m., do you just brace yourself until the days lengthen? What if winter isn't something to survive, but instead something to savor? Psychologist and winter expert Carrie Leibowitz joins us to challenge everything we think we know about the coldest, darkest season.
After moving above the Arctic Circle to study winter's toll on mental health, Carrie discovered something surprising. People there actually love it. Drawing on mindset science, original research, and cultural traditions from Norway to Japan, her book, How to Winter, shows how rethinking winter can lift our mood and help us navigate even the darkest seasons of life. Carrie Leibowitz, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
We are thrilled to have you, Carrie. One of the things that I think is so interesting about your research was that you started off really hating winter and you wanted to find out these people that live above the Arctic Circle, and there are a lot of them, love winter. They embrace winter. They belong to all those, you know, Scandinavian countries where they're the happiest people on the planet. Tell us more.
That's right. So yeah, I grew up at the Jersey Shore. And so I grew up in a very summer-centric town. And I grew up really in this summer-centric culture where winter was this time of year that was very limiting, very depressing. It was the time of year you had to get through to make it to the best season. And I grew up just sort of enduring the winter. And so when I learned about this city north of the Arctic Circle, Tromsø, which is so far north that they experience 2 months of what's known as the polar night, which is this time from late November to late January where the sun doesn't rise above the horizon. And when I learned about this, I assumed that they must have really high rates of winter depression or seasonal affective disorder because the winter is inherently depressing. They have a long, dark, cold winter. Everyone must be depressed. But actually, if you look at the research, that's not the case. The rates of winter depression in Tromsø, Norway are similar to the rates in Maryland in the United States, which is much farther south, has a much brighter winter. And so I really wondered what was going on here, right? What is it that allows people to make it through this long, dark, cold winter and to thrive? And so I moved there for a year to do this research and to find out for myself. And I found a culture that really relates to winter differently, that sees the winter not as a limiting time of year, but as a season full of opportunity with many things to enjoy. And I think that there are a lot that the individuals do there to embrace the season, and also a lot of things that the city does and that the country does that help make winter enjoyable for the people in the city of Tromsø. And so I really started noticing that interplay between mindset, which is what my research focuses on, but also sort of culture and infrastructure.
Well, I will tell you, Carrie, and my husband could tell you this, on June 21st, I start lamenting that the days are getting shorter. You are such an Eeyore, he will say to me. And yet, when I read about your research, it immediately just made me change my mindset. And this is what you talk about, developing a positive winter mindset. What is included in that?
Right. I think a lot of people struggle with winter's darkness, and that is actually quite normal, right? So we like to forget this sometimes, but we are animals living on a planet. And so we are affected by cycles of light and dark. So light can make us feel awake and alert, which can provide a mood boost, and darkness makes us feel tired and sleepy. But that in and of itself isn't necessarily a bad thing, right? Being tired at the end of the day, as any insomniac will tell you, being sleepy when it's time to go to bed is actually a gift, right? Is actually how we want to feel. And so this feeling of feeling tired or feeling low energy or low motivation during winter's long dark days is sort of ambiguous. And this gets to your sort of main question of what is a positive wintertime mindset? And so it's sort of filtering all of the things about winter, the cold, the dark, the shorter days, the winter weather, through a positive lens and interpreting their meaning on us positively, right? So winter is objectively cold, but is that cold frigid and uncomfortable and something that demotivates us and forces us to hunker down and hibernate, that might be a more negative wintertime mindset? Or is that cold refreshing and rejuvenating and something that leads to snow, which is really beautiful and fun to play in, and an excuse for drinking tea and wearing cozy sweaters? That would be a positive wintertime mindset, right? So you're looking at this sort of objective facts of the world, but your interpretation of them is always subjective, and that is guided in large part by our mindset. And so how we're looking at the season and making sense of the facts of the season and its impact on us is our wintertime mindset, which of course my work shows that we can help people shift to be more positive.
I love that. And there is actually a quote in your book where you say, "At its best, winter conjures images of cozy snow days and hot chocolate with marshmallows, reading in front of the fireplace with the dog in your lap, skiing from rustic lodges, sledding at top speeds, and snowball fights." And I was like, yes, that is. And that's kind of our like branding of Park City. You know, we're all about the winter wonder. But the rub is that when we're not doing those things and not having those kind of idyllic moments, we need to actually be accomplishing the tasks of life, often under much less sensorially pleasant conditions, right? We're cold and damp, our joints feel different, all those things. Is that part of the reason winter's gotten a bad rap for people? Is it just discomfort? Or what are some of the mosaic of reasons that people have trouble with winter?
You know, it's a really good question. I think it is the discomfort, but it's really, like you said, it's about the branding, right? Because summer can also be uncomfortable. You can be sweaty and mosquitoes and bugs and sunburn. And, you know, the beach is amazing. I love the beach, but can also be sensorily very, you know, you're sticky and you're salty and you're sandy and you're sunscreeny, right? Like, but we don't have the same negative associations with summer. And so, you know, I don't know if this comes from summer being the time of vacation, especially when we're kids. But there really is this negative winter branding. And I think part of it actually comes from this history on seasonal affective disorder or winter depression. I think in our efforts to warn people about this possible disorder or to help people who are suffering from this disorder, which is actually a pretty small part of the population, it's a subtype of clinical depression. So, you know, first you have to have clinical depression before you can be diagnosed with seasonal affective disorder. But in our efforts to sort of help people, we've put out this narrative that winter causes depression, that winter is inherently depressing. And then when you have these days, you wake up, maybe it's not a picture perfect snow day and you still have to go to work or school or do your responsibilities and it's gray outside and it's cold and it's raining. You look outside and you think, oh, this is depressing. You don't think, oh, this is a really great day to, you know, bundle up and take a brisk walk to the office and then sort of feel better. Or you don't think, oh, actually, this is a great day to be stuck inside at work in front of my computer, you know, drinking tea, answering emails. Like, what a cozy backdrop for that. You really have this narrative almost written for you by our culture that you're supposed to feel depressed in response to these things. And I actually encounter that from, you know, readers of my work who love the winter, who say that they feel vindicated because it's such a, in some ways, a non-normative position that people can feel a little embarrassed to be winter lovers. I mean, maybe not in Park City if you have great skiing and good winter sports, but I think people really feel like they have to fight for their right to love winter.
Yeah, well, I'm actually one of those people. Lynn and I have talked about this a few times, is I look forward to the winter coming, and I'm a big proponent of the things you mentioned in the book about applying it to things like creativity and productivity, that there are rhythms to our lives. And I see the winter as my kind of hunker down time, and I'm absorbing stuff and I'm processing stuff. And then you get ready for the next season, which might be manufacture and presenting and all those different things. Is that part of the skill of wintering, is learning to work with those rhythms?
Definitely, Mary Beth. I mean, if you look at every other living thing on earth, plant or animal, they're all changing their behavior to slow down in the winter in some way. And so I think part of our problem is when we have these personal and cultural expectations that we should maintain a steady level of productivity and energy and motivation year round, when that's actually quite unnatural. And this is something I saw in Tromsø. When you live in a place that goes from 24 hours of full sun in the summer to 24 hours without direct sun in the winter, it's obvious that you're going to change your behavior. It's obvious that you're going to slow down in winter, that you're going to be more tired, that you're going to sleep more, that you're going to socialize differently, that you're going to eat differently, that you're going to have different hobbies. But I think those of us at lower latitudes often don't feel like we have permission to shift seasonally. And part of adopting a positive wintertime mindset is accepting winter for what it is and adapting to it. And I think the people who really do love the winter are able to find those ways where, it's not the time that they're forced to stay inside or have to do less because there's nothing to do. It's the time that they get to slow down, where they have the opportunity to focus on absorption or deep thinking or creative work or making space or laying the groundwork for things so that then they can like really perform in other seasons. And I think this kind of rhythmic living, when you embrace it, can feel really good and can help you love all seasons, right? I love the slowness of winter, but I also love the intensity of summer. And for me, this is also where this practice of learning to embrace winter can help us in other difficult times of life, right? Because we're all gonna have times when we are forced to slow down by things outside of our control. Times that we're sick, where we're grieving, where we're burnt out, where we're recovering from illness or childbirth or trauma, whatever it is. And if you have this sort of seasonal practice of slowing down in the winter and re-emerging in the spring and summer and slowing down again, I think it gives you that lived experience of knowing that these things are temporary and that it's okay to slow down and that you will be able to reemerge and pick things up again, which I think is a really healthy way to meet those challenging seasons of life. So I sort of think of winter as this opportunity for this sort of friendlier, easier micro practice that can help us when we face some of the bigger challenges that are going to come our way, whether we want them to or not.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with psychologist and winter expert Carrie Leibowitz. She has written a book called How to Winter, and we're talking about adapting a winter mindset. Carrie, I was reading about Tromsø, and it is often called the Paris of the North. And I think we have this idea that people who live above the Arctic Circle with the polar nights, like they're living a very rural life. It's very interesting that there is a thriving city up there. And there's a university there. It's a very cosmopolitan place, which I don't know why that just kind of struck me as something curious. I'm just picturing all of this very cosmopolitan life going on in the dark. Was it surprising to you when you arrived?
So, I arrived in August, so it was actually light almost 24 hours a day. But the funny thing about Tromsø is I don't know if it's where it is on the map or my sort of knowledge of how far north you are is like it's got this paradox to it where there's everything you need, right? It's got a really great art scene and lots of festivals and beautiful museums. It's becoming more and more of a tourist destination, and it's got an excellent university and all this stuff that you could need in a really lively small city. But it still does kind of feel to me like it's on the edge of the earth. And Norway is, it's relatively sparsely populated, and so you only have to drive 20 or 30 minutes outside of the city before you really feel like you're in the sort of Norwegian wilderness. But the funny thing about the polar night is how kind of normal it feels, right? Like in Park City, it gets dark in the winter at 4:30, and you go out at 6 o'clock and you do things, and you go to restaurants and you go to your friend's house and you go to the gym, and maybe you're coming home from work or whatever it is. And you do that in the dark. And so it's sort of just like that, except there's more darkness. And the other thing that's really special is so Tromsø is far north enough that the sun never rises directly, but it gets a few hours of what's called civil twilight each day. So this is like the time where the sky is light, before the sun rises or after it sets. So you get these few hours of indirect light, and the sky can be painted with beautiful sort of sunrise and sunset-like colors for 2 or 3 or 4 hours at a time. The time on either end of that, there's something about the angle of the light and being so far north, things can get very, very blue. Like sometimes it literally looks like you're wearing blue tinted glasses looking out at the world. Usually in the winter it's very snowy and the snow is reflecting. So, it is actually quite a beautiful place during the winter. And, people always ask me, oh, should I go to northern Norway in the summer during the midnight sun or during the winter during the polar night? And I say winter. I just think the winter there is so special and so unlike anything I've experienced anywhere else on Earth. So it is a little bit romantic. I have more romantic than it sounds when you hear, polar night for sure.
Well, since we're talking about romantic places that experience a lot of darkness, you do a bit of a survey of other places in the world, like Scotland and Japan, and you observe and talk about in your book some of their rituals and things they do to create and bolster that winter mindset. What are they?
Yeah. So it was really important for me when I was researching my book to expand on Norway because Norway does kind of have this idyllic winter, right? It's very snowy. You can ski. There's the Northern Lights. But what if you live in the, Outer Hebrides off the coast of Scotland, right? What if you don't live somewhere that is freezing and snowy, but that is damp and chilly and gray and rainy? I actually currently live in Amsterdam, and we have winters like this where it very rarely snows, it's very rarely below freezing, but it's quite dark, it's quite gray, it's wet, it's rainy, sort of all winter long. And what you see is that people who live through extreme winters, whether they're freezing and snowy or just damp and gray, all have strategies for getting through the winter. So what I found in Scotland is there's a lot of community gatherings. There's a lot of drinking whiskey by the fire. There's a lot of eating warming foods. And there is still this sort of seasonal rhythm and seasonal awareness. And this idea of community gathering is something you see in a lot of places. I interviewed someone in Fairbanks, Alaska, who said that if you go to the cafes in Fairbanks in the winter, the community bulletin boards are full because there's all sorts of community events and meetups and things to do. And in the winter, or sorry, in the summer, they're empty because everybody's just out in the sun being outside. So they don't need those community gatherings. And I thought that was really interesting because I think a lot of people consider the winter to be a lonely time of year. But actually, I think cultures that do winter well and communities that do winter well have a way of pulling people together and pulling people close to get through the coldest and darkest part of the year. And so for me, that is something I took away that I started noticing that, when it's a little bit harder for me to find the motivation to leave my house and do things, I need to make a little bit of an extra effort to socialize during the winter months. So that can look different for everybody, right? Maybe you start a book club, maybe you start a knitting circle, maybe you have a standing movie date. I have an almost 1-year-old at home, and so I'm feeling like I didn't have the energy to take on a lot of hosting or a lot of organizing. So this year I started doing this thing on Thursday nights. We host snack dinner and we have snacks for dinner. It's like bread and cheese and veggies and hummus and whatever people show up and bring. And we invite a close circle of friends on a sort of standing basis and whoever can come comes. And it's a super low lift way to just get like a little bit of extra winter socialization in, which is something that I feel like I really need at this time of year. So I think there's lots of different ways to do this so that it works with your life wherever you are.
I love that. Snack dinner sounds like a lot of fun. I love the old phrase. We hear it sometimes here in town that I think it's Norwegian, that there is no bad weather, there's only bad clothes. It's
That's
just
true.
like some of positive wintering is just be prepared for the realities, right? Like,
That's
what
right.
can we do as we feel winter coming on, if you're not maybe a huge winter person, to get yourself in a more positive winter mindset?
Yeah, so some of these things are physical, right? So making sure you have the right clothes. So, everyone in Scandinavia looks like they're very sort of chic, but their secret is they're wearing these thin woolen undergarments all the time. So they're wearing woolen leggings and woolen undershirts. And so they look very chic, but they're also warm enough, So making sure you have the right sweaters and coats and rain gear and undergarments. Also preparing your house. So for me, that means making sure I have enough tea and coffee on hand. I'm basically drinking tea nonstop in the winter. I have my candle on my desk when I'm working, right? Playing with lighting is a really big one. So we see this a lot also in Scandinavia, is rather than trying to turn all the lights on to banish the darkness, they're very intentional about using candlelight and lamps and indirect lighting, which sort of embraces the darkness and doesn't fight against it, but welcomes it in and creates this cozy romantic mood that is possible really only in the winter when it's dark out. You can also, you can switch over your duvet on your bed for a warmer bed cover. I sleep with a hot water bottle in the winter months. You can change the things you eat, right? Focus on soups and stews and hearty filling dishes. And these are things a lot of people do anyway, right? A lot of people are eating a lot of soup at this time of year, but really think about that as an indulgence of winter, something you're doing intentionally to embrace the season. And then sort of mentally, you can think about, what do I need at this time of year, right? So for some people, that's real slowness and you feel that tiredness and you need to say, okay, I need to clear my calendar of a little bit of whatever's extra so I have more space for rest and contemplation and reading and slowing down. And for other people, like we were just talking about, maybe you need an extra push towards socialization, right? And so I think it's about sort of preparing your physical environment, but also preparing mentally and emotionally to say, like, what do I need at this time of year to really thrive and to really feel good? And being okay with that and not thinking of this extra preparation as something that means winter is especially challenging, right? You still have to prepare when you go on a beach vacation. I don't know about you guys, but it takes me a lot of work to pack up and schlep and bring all of the stuff, right? We do this in other seasons as well. I think we can just do it a little bit more deliberately in winter.
Sure. Well, we're almost out of time, but I guess my last question for you is, what would we lose if winter was not part of the rhythms of our seasons?
Well, first, I think that sort of philosophically, it's really important to have a season that invites us to slow down, right? We like to pretend that growth and productivity is linear and that we can just go up in a straight line forever, but nothing in nature works like that. And so having a season that invites us to have this sort of cyclical rhythm, I think is really powerful. And then you can think about sort of a literal winter, right? So with global warming, with climate change, there are a lot of places that used to be snowy, that had great skiing, that now are not having great skiing. There are a lot of places that used to have a reliably snowy winter and now are having rain and gray slush all winter long. And I do think that difference is really profound, because snow opens up a host of winter activities, right? So skiing and snowboarding and snowshoeing and ski mobiling and ice skating on frozen bodies of water. Snow also reflects the light and insulates the landscape, so it can brighten things up in winter. We also know that even in warmer places, winter's cold is really important. So for example, a couple of years ago in the state of Georgia, the winter was too warm. The peach trees started blossoming too early, and then a freeze later in the season killed all those buds and destroyed the peach crop, which was such a big problem that the U.S. declared a state of emergency for that region of Georgia. But so, even the summer stone fruits, even the things we love in summer, rely on winter. And so I think, we're starting to really understand the importance of winter for the cycle of the whole year. And I hope that that will encourage more and more people to, vote for policies that protect winter and support organizations that are working to save winter, because there really is a tremendous amount to be lost. And I fear that, you know, in the future we'll have the same amount of darkness, right? The sun will still rise and set at the same time, but no snow, no cold, no winter activities, no summer stone fruit, right? And so I think, you know, we really want winter in all of its cold and icy glory to go along with what it's supposed to be.
Well, you really encapsulated what we are all thinking here in Park City as we started off with a very brown winter until about a week ago. My sister-in-law's daffodils have started coming up in Salt Lake City. She lives in Salt Lake City, so that's 2,000 feet lower, but still, that's unheard of. Carrie Leibowitz, it has been such a pleasure to talk to you. I love this topic. I know that you were surprised at how many people have loved this topic. You say thousands and thousands of people have jumped onto this, and it's very helpful. And what a wonderful thing. The book is called How to Winter. And Carrie, you have an online community, right?
Yeah, so I have a newsletter on Substack called Wintry Mix, where I send out winter updates and tips and things that didn't make it in the book. And then I also offer workshops for organizations. So I love to bring my How to Winter workshop to groups and do in-person and virtual events for schools, libraries, businesses, tech companies. I did one for a bird sanctuary once, museums, you know. So it's really fun to get to talk to so many people in so many different places about how to embrace winter.
That's so wonderful. Well, Carrie, thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life.
Thanks, Carrie.
Thanks for having me.